and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, August 17th, 2018. Did a former president receive a fake passport from someone in South Sudan?
We are not aware of any passport given to Bozizi, and that needs some kind of checkup.
And the owner of a Kampala hotel popular with South Sudanese wants justice for a murdered employee and friend.
What we need only justice for people who have died innocently. They have never moved. They have never gone to someone. They were in their room and they were just protecting their life and murder.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government denies issuing a diplomatic passport to former Central African Republic President François Bozizé, who has been sanctioned by the UN Security Council for committing alleged crimes against humanity. In a July 23rd letter, the panel of experts on the CIR informed the Security Council president that Bozizé is likely traveling with counterfeit documents, including a South Sudanese passport. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
François Bozizé is among 11 people sanctioned by the UN Security Council for allegedly committing crimes against humanity during the anti-Balaka and the ex-Seleka violence in the Central African Republic in 2014. The sanctions include a travel ban and asset freezes. The UN panel of experts on the Central African Republic notified the UN Security Council late last month that former President Bozizé was violating a travel ban by using fake travel documents that include a South Sudanese diplomatic passport bearing the name Samuel Peter Mude, with passport number D0000-2284. In early February, the UN Security Council obtained from Kenyan authorities a copy of the passport used by Bozizé, issued to one Samuel Peter Mude after he visited Kenya. The UN panel says it confirmed by facial recognition the passport was being used by Bozizé. In a copy of the passport used by Bozizé obtained by South Sudan in Focus, the name on the passport is Samuel Peter Mude, and the issuing authority is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Juba. The passport holder's occupation is listed as professor. His nationality is listed as South Sudanese. The passport is dated June 11, 2013 and expires in June 2017, place of issue, Juba. But passports in South Sudan are issued by the Ministry of Interior. South Sudan Foreign Affairs spokesman Mawen Makol Arik insists South Sudan does not issue diplomatic passports to foreigners.
What we are saying here is that we are not aware of any passport given to Bozizé, and that needs some kind of checkup.
Arik says he does not rule out the possibility that some individuals in South Sudan may have issued the diplomatic passport to the former president of the Central African Republic.
Well, if there is any error that happened, that the said person abused diplomatic passport in a way that the authorities are not aware of it, that has to be dealt with it by the laws of South Sudan. We are only to issue passports to the citizens of the Republic of South Sudan. In case of any mistake that happened, committed by individuals, people in the country, to issue a passport to a person who is not a citizen, of course, there are laws and regulations that govern that kind of a mistake.
In a letter dated February 8 sent to South Sudan's permanent mission to the United Nations, the expert panel requested information about the passport used by Bozizé. It states that the South Sudan government has yet to respond to its inquiries. Arik says the South Sudan Foreign Affairs Ministry has not received any formal request for such information. Bozizé has been living in Uganda for the past few years. In late June, Uganda asked the Security Council's panel of experts to, quote, assist and relocate Mr. Bozizé to a third country to avoid any speculation or implication, end quote. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The owner of Kampala's Juba City Hotel, a popular destination among Sudanese and South Sudanese alike, says he wants the killers of his manager and friend to be arrested, prosecuted, and punished. Police say two Sudanese nationals were shot and killed early Wednesday in what appears to be a botched robbery attempt. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Kampala.
Relatives and friends of the victims continue to flock to the fourth floor of a building at Arua Park in downtown Kampala, site of the Juba City Hotel. They are paying their respects and offering condolences a day after the two victims were buried at a Kampala cemetery. Police say they are holding three suspects in connection with the incident. El Sadiq Hamad, the Sudanese owner of the hotel, says the three being detained and others who were involved in the murders must face the full force of the law.
What we need only justice for people who have died innocently. They have never moved it. They have never gone to someone. They were in their room and they were just protecting their life and their belongings and have been killed for no good reason.
Initial reports indicate the suspects checked into the hotel as guests a few days prior to the attack, according to Hamad. Juba City Hotel security guard Bidong Nelson says he was at the far end of the lobby when he suddenly heard gunfire early in the morning.
At four, sharp. At four. Nothing like a noise that, where is the money? Nothing like that noise. I just heard gunshot at four. Gunshot. That gunshot, they first shoot two bullets at a go. Tata. And even the other one did not take like 10 seconds, also they shot the third one.
Hamad says he also heard gunshots coming from another part of the hotel, but it did not occur to him that the shooting was happening inside the hotel.
When I was getting out, I just put in my clothes to get out. I saw somebody who have knocked, a friend of mine knocked my door. Getting out, then he giving me the bad news that your brother, I mean your friend has died. They killed him. Another one, they also took him to the hospital. So by the time I reached to see my brother, I just want to speak him to see Ibrahim whether he can say to me something. I got him when he's already dead.
Hamad says he believes the perpetrators shot his friend to convince the hotel manager to give them the money. And when the manager refused to comply, he too was shot. Nelson says after the shootings, the armed men ordered him to open the hotel gate so they could flee. When he did not do as he was told, Nelson says the gunman fired a shot that whizzed past his ears.
Then when I opened for them, he put me under gunpoint. They wanted to shoot me. Now by shooting me these stairs, he missed one step. Then he went in the speeding. Then he saw his friend leaving him, decided to follow the friends.
Nelson says he chased the gunman and after sounding the hotel alarm, guests rushed out of their rooms and joined in the pursuit. He says they captured three gunmen who they handed over to police. Kampala Metropolitan Police spokesperson Luke Oweyesigire says before they were apprehended, the gunmen apparently stole cash from the hotel room of the victims.
It is alleged these people accessed the room where Mohammed Abdallah and Ibrahim Bakit attacked them, shot and killed on spot, and ran away with unspecified amounts of cash. It happened in room number 01 on the fourth floor.
Hamad says his friend who was gunned down in the attack was an economic student at the University of Juba who came to Uganda just a few days earlier to attend Hamad's wedding. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
Passengers on board a Juba-bound Fly 540 Airlines flight from Nairobi to Juba were forced to turn around in midair this week when their flight was canceled. Awak Deng Akwe was on board that Tuesday flight when it was ordered to turn back to Nairobi. The plane later landed safely in the Kenyan capital. 540 Airlines passenger Akwe told Ayen Deng Bior at Jomo Kenyatta Airport in Nairobi that passengers were never given a full explanation of why the flight had to return to Nairobi.
I booked a flight through 540 flight to Juba from Nairobi. And got to the airport, went through security, everything was checked in, and we got on the plane. It was a little bit late. I think we were originally scheduled to leave at, was it 2:30? But yeah, we didn't leave. No, it was for 2, but we didn't leave here till 2:30. And so the plane took off, and we were flying at around 3:30. So halfway into the flight, there was an announcement from the pilot saying that the plane will have to turn around. Back to Nairobi, because the way he worded it, he said due to technical issues in Juba. And so then we just double-checked with the flight attendant, right, just to make sure everything was okay, because some people actually thought it was the plane that was having technical issues. But she assured us and said that, no, it wasn't the plane. There's issues in Juba, and we tried to ask her what the issues were. She said she didn't have any more information. And so, yeah, so long story short, we turned around, came back to Nairobi. It landed fine, thank God. That was a little bit scary because some people were saying that maybe it is a technical issue with the plane, but they're just not being honest. But, yeah, so we made it back safely. And so once we were back, we tried to ask the 540 crew what the issue is, and we never really got an answer. They just kept telling us there's problems in Juba. We've been denied entry. All 540 flights have been denied entry. They would not give us a reason. There was some South Sudanese men that were with us. They started to say that the reason that, you know, 540 is denied entry is because they have not been paying their landing fees. And apparently this talk, like, there's been a buzz going on for the past few weeks on the news or something. And so that's what one of the guys said. So that's basically the reason.
What about your refund? Obviously, the flight was canceled. Did they say that they're going to give you your money back?
Yeah, they did say that everyone would be refunded. They didn't give us an exact, like, time period, but we did demand. We said, no, we need to know, because some of us, as soon as we go back to Juba, it's going to be hard to communicate with you guys or to even get the refund because we're in a different country. And so we managed to talk to them, and they said that they would start the refund within the next day or two.
That was Fly 540 passenger Awak Dangakwe speaking to Ayen Bior on Wednesday in Nairobi. It's not clear if Fly 540 flights have resumed in Juba today. The airline did not respond to requests for comment. According to its website, Fly 540 is a low-cost East Africa-based airline that offers low fares to Kenya, South Sudan, and Zanzibar. In Uganda, politicians and human rights advocates are condemning treason charges against legislators and the detention of another in a military facility. Five legislators were arrested on Monday for allegedly stoning the president's motorcade. Critics from both the ruling party and the opposition want the government to explain the reason for the charges and for alleged torture of those arrested. They have also called upon Ugandans to rise up and defend the Constitution and their civil rights. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Yesterday, more than 30 people were charged with treason at the Chief Magistrate's Court in Gulu District. Among them are four legislators, Gerard Karuhanga, Paul Mwiru, Kassiano Wadri, and Michael Mabike. However, renowned musician turned legislator Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, was charged separately with illegal possession of firearms before the general court-martial and remanded at Makindye military barracks. They were arrested on Monday by Special Forces Command soldiers. All of those arrested are reported to have obstructed President Museveni's convoy by pelting it with stones as he returned from a campaign rally. But the arrests, subsequent detention, and alleged torture of the parliamentarians have not gone down well with a cross-section of politicians and human rights defenders. Monica Amoding is a Ugandan legislator.
This must stop. We want to denounce this and also say that these are trumped-up charges. I believe that no Ugandan, particularly members of parliament, can commit such a crime of throwing a stone to the presidential convoy.
Another legislator, Sam Yomoki, scoffs at what he calls fabricated charges by Museveni.
The president must be able to understand and to see that we are not idiots, because, you know, he might be thinking that what he's doing, trying to parade members of parliament as criminal, that Ugandans are buying that falsehood. No one is buying that falsehood. And for me, I want to assure you that this Arua is a signal, a sign that the time has come to start counting the winding up of our father.
Betty Aol Ochan is the leader of opposition in parliament. She has called for the unconditional release of the legislators. Aol has called on the public to rise up and protest their continued detention.
We call upon all peace and democracy-loving Ugandans and all other stakeholders, human rights defenders, and the international community to take keen interest to what is happening in this country and join with us to demand for fairness and good governance.
A long-time rival of Museveni, Four-time presidential contender Dr. Kizza Besigye dismisses the decision by government to arraign legislators before military courts.
No civilian person should be charged and attempted to be tried in the military courts. Military courts are courts of service discipline, discipline of servicemen. They are part and parcel of the hierarchy of the military service. These courts are not only formed by Mr. Museveni, of course, but these ones are subordinate to the commander-in-chief. They take orders. They have no protection of independence. There is no protection of independence in the military court. Even if the charges were that they had guns illegally, those cases are triable also in the civil courts.
Lawyers have petitioned the Uganda Human Rights Commission, challenging the detention of the legislators and others on the same charges. Ladislas Rakafuzi is a human rights advocate.
We think that the acts of the state are arbitrary, a total violation of the rule of law, and a violation of fundamental human rights. People have been tortured. We have come to the commission here to urge for answers from the state, because this is the bridge. The commission is the bridge by which we, the common people, have to reach the state. We hope the commission has answers.
General J.J. Odong is Uganda's Minister for Internal Affairs. He insists that government will continue to crack down on illegal possessions.
Impunity of whatever kind or amount shall not be tolerated. It is noteworthy that possessions have resulted in clashes and violence. It is therefore our considered opinion and advice that these processions should be discouraged.
Police have for the second day been engaging in running battles with youths in the Kampala suburb of Kamocha, the home to legislator Robert Kyagulanyi. The European Union and the U.S. Embassy in Kampala have released statements condemning the detention. According to a U.S. Embassy statement, all of those detained have the right to humane treatment, due process, access to lawyers and to their families, and a prompt, fair, and transparent trial. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, the latest on efforts to contain the Ebola outbreak in the neighboring DRC. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
which do you prefer, locally brewed beer or imported beer?
I like made in Cameroon. You know, I've consumed a few quantities from different countries, but you know, it's a matter of taste. You know, beer, Cameroon has very good beer. I like it, but I don't equally discard. It's good to always blend.
Locally made beer, anyone can go brew. The ones that come from outside, I prefer the one inside because I prefer that the money stays in here, or to encourage those who are doing it here at home, because that is the force of Nigeria. They consume what is prepared by them. So I believe we should do so rather than consuming what is from outside.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The World Health Organization says security issues could hamper efforts to contain an Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The outbreak is in conflict-ridden North Kivu province, where some areas are too dangerous for healthcare workers to go. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
As of Wednesday, about 2 weeks after the Ebola outbreak was declared in North Kivu province, there were 78 confirmed and probable cases of the viral disease, including 44 deaths. That is nearly double the number of cases reported during a recent and separate Ebola outbreak in Equateur province. Health workers have fanned out in North Kivu, tracking down contacts of Ebola victims and giving them an experimental vaccine. But WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says more cases of Ebola are expected to be seen in the coming days and weeks.
It will get worse before it gets better. We don't know if we are having all transmission chains identified. We expect to see more cases as a result of earlier infections, and these infections are developing into illness.
He tells VOA that health workers are able to move around freely in the towns of Mangina and Beni, which are the epicenters of the disease. It is the other parts of the province that have the WHO worried.
There are areas just next to Mangina that are level 4 on the UNDSS security scale, which means that it's an area not to go to. The worst case scenario is that we have this security blind spots where the epidemic could take hold and we don't know about.
The WHO reports it is using the same Ebola vaccine that helped contain the outbreak in Equator province. So far, it says, nearly 500 people in North Kivu have been vaccinated, including healthcare workers and people who have come in contact with confirmed cases of the deadly disease. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabweans are waiting to learn the final outcome of the recent elections. Zimbabwe's election commission says incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa of the ruling ZANU-PF party won the presidency. But the opposition movement for democratic change, led by Nelson Chamisa, is contesting the results in court. As Kudzai Zinvashi reports, the political uncertainty creates economic uncertainty too.
After the polls, Zimbabwe's political events turned violent when authorities fired live ammunition at unarmed civilians who were alleging the election was being stolen by ZANU-PF. Darlington Tsozo is a shop owner in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare.
When the economy is bad, business will also be affected. And when politics is not good, everything in the country gets affected. As retailers in this country, we already have been facing problems of shortage of foreign currencies.
Now that opposition MDC Alliance filed a court application on Friday last week contesting the July 30th results that made ZANU-PF presidential candidate Emmerson Mnangagwa the president-elect. That has created a political standoff that's affecting the country's economy. Christopher Mugaga is an economist and is the chief executive officer of Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce.
If you look at the current standoff, especially regarding the outcome of the 30 July election, certainly it's not doing well for business, causing a lot of discomfort and apprehension, especially from the business community.
He adds that Zimbabwe has often been haunted by contested elections in the past.
If you look at how Zimbabwe for the past 2 decades had somehow suffered due to contested elections, that alone can actually tell you the destabilizing effect that the election outcome, which is contested, is having.
Mugaga says accusations that the court system is not objective but favors the ruling party does not help the situation. If anything, the case could leave the reputation of the courts even more damaged than before. Eddie Cross is a senior member of the MDC Alliance and an economist.
I think the investment community around the world is standing by and watching what's happening. They're very disturbed, I think, by the violence. Businessmen need stability and they need continuity and they need peaceful conditions. And I think for many businessmen, all investment decisions are on hold until this situation clarifies.
Whoever wins, Cross adds political maturity is needed to unite the country, salvage the goodwill that existed after long-term ruler Robert Mugabe was removed from office, and move the country forward with a new government. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
For the last 4 years, the U.S. government has funded the Mandela Washington Fellowship, which has brought thousands of young Africans to study in respected U.S. universities, including Ivy League schools. While praising the fellowship, 2 South Sudan fellows say they have heard criticism that the fellowship program does not create tangible change in their home country. In part 2 of her series on the Mandela Fellows, Ayan Dang Bior has this report from Washington.
The Mandela Washington Fellowship began in 2014 under former U.S. President Barack Obama. This year, the program hosted 700 young Africans, according to the U.S. Department of State. That number is noticeably less than the previous year, which brought 1,000 fellows to the U.S., although the number has decreased this year. Barna Joseph, another South Sudanese fellow under the Civic Leadership Program at Drexel University in the East Coast state of Pennsylvania, says that should not detract potential applicants from taking advantage of a program she calls life-changing.
I want our, like, any young person who is hearing me from across Africa, and particularly in South Sudan, back my home country, that they should never hesitate or give up in applying for this program. I've been applying for this program for the last 4 years since it was initiated first time, and in 2014, I've been applying. Every time I apply, it fails, and I keep on applying next year, it fails, and this time I got it. I never gave up. It's not just about you coming to United States and see the need, the heaven in the United States, but it's about what are you going to take out of here? It's about the knowledge, the strategy. Let's forget about the notion of we beat Africa when we are incapable of doing things, but no, we are capable. Once you reach here, you will know that you have more ability on yourself. So I really encourage young people to do much more, and especially South Sudanese. We came only 10, but I'm hoping next year will be 20 of us who are applying for this program. This will make a lot of difference and changes back home.
Past fellows have taken part in peace campaigns like Defy Hate Now, as well as Ana Taban. Other South Sudanese fellows have gone to work in the private sector. Despite success on an individual level, South Sudan has some of the worst indicators in the world, from health to the economy and education. Victoria says she is well aware of the realities of her country.
Even me, I also had a lot of information, people saying, you people have been going for the Mandela Washington Fellowship since 2014. Nothing is happening in the country. Everyone comes with different objectives. You might come with your own, you might have designed a project which is just to bring you to the U.S. But if you have the passion and determination to do or deliver to your society or community, you will indeed do what you expect to do.
Joseph, who is part of the Ana Taban campaign for peace in South Sudan, says her work and the work of her colleagues began long before the fellowship. She says the fellowship, also known as YALI, has helped her think of new ways to effectively work towards peace, like curating a network of other young Africans who lobby for peace in their home countries.
I don't even want to wait for YALI if it would take before I come here. I love to work with children, and I want to do a different image of, instead of searching online and get a picture of a child who is dying at the refugee camps and all the bones are out and that sad images, I want next year when people search online, they should see a picture of a child who is presenting a talent show, a picture of a child who is wearing a costume of an animal, any beautiful animal on themselves, and they're acting, a picture of a child who is doing an artwork. That's the images that people are going to see starting from next year.
Joseph is planning to return to South Sudan, where she hopes to continue her social activism for peace in her country.
That was Ayen Dang-Bior reporting. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with a song, Original, by Fally Ipupa.
Original. Hustle. Hustle. Trop d'avance comme Rolls-Royce sur moto. Fally Ipupa dit cap la merveille. Original. Original. Listen, écoutez bien. Get up and dance, dance.
Africa, viens danser. Europa, viens danser. America, let's dance. Sud America, pour moi, c'est dance. Asia,
we We've been listening to Fally Ipupa with the song Original. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for joining us. We hope you have a great weekend, and we'll meet you back here again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Woo.